Sharon. I would like to introduce tonight, this evening's speaker is Barbara from Long Beach.
I'm Barbara and I'm an alcoholic. And I had all these things I wanted to tell you, you know, this and that and that. That's the kind of way my head goes. It kind of zooms in on the GSR and, oh, what a wonderful... But I want to tell you, though, the reason why I was zooming in, I love the format of this meeting. I love the fact that there's AA information. First, the GSR... Oh, and I've got a number for you, honey. What am I... It could be my baby, Kimberly there, you know, she went all through her life as GSR, and when she became grapevine rep for the area, she cried. It's a wonderful thing. And then I have a friend who was GSR delegate. He became a Class B trustee because he's a drunk. Then he became a director. And he came in about 6 months after me. I said, Paul, how in the hell you come into AA right behind me? And I turn around and you've just been a trustee and a director of AA, you know, and right here in Southern California. And I'm just a little member. But it's wonderful. So if you ever need his number, it's being a GSR, but going on through it. My first sponsor was a delegate. And I get chills watching his eyes light up when he represents San Diego County in New York. Anyway, I didn't come here to talk about that or critique you. I do want to thank Marsha, and oh, I'm so glad to see her, and Johnny, just for inviting me here. And I want to thank my AA grandbaby, Sean, for driving me down here. And then my baby, Kimberly, she loves Marsha, and she just wanted to come. And you know, some of you are looking at me strange. One day, I don't know when it was, because it wasn't that many years ago. I'm still not wrapped. Oh, first I need to thank Karen. Where are you who read that, the chapter 5? Okay, there you are. Because let me tell you something. I can go home now, okay? Because when I was new, I was so sick. My mind was just so, horrible, you know, that I used to sit in the meeting, and when they read that chapter 5, I tried to let my mind follow, you know. And usually I got to rarely as, and then they got to rarely as we, you know, but it took years, literally years. But the part in there that would say, do not be discouraged. That used to give me so much hope and make me come back to another meeting. And today, years later, that just gives me hope when you read that part in the how it works. But I was, I guess it was 3 or 4 years ago, or maybe less, I can't remember. And when you get old, everything starts tumbling. And... that's the gold on the years, because you don't see much when you look for the gold. It's tarnished, so they say. Now, thank God in AA I can have that, you know. If I wasn't in AA, Lord have mercy. But I'm so grateful to be an alcoholic, a sober one in Alcoholics Anonymous. But they start saying something about a sponsee and all that stuff. I didn't know what they were talking about. So I started listening, and I talked to Debbie Davis up north there, because she is into AA, 1,150%. You really want to know something like what people are doing, you call Debbie. I said, what did this sponsee stuff come up? And she said, up here they're calling them sponsories. I said, holy ghost. I called New York. I said, where did that come from? Some treatment center? Some, you know, we always put everything on the treatment center. Now that we have them. Anyway, and they went on and on. So anyway, it just threw me for a loop. because I want to tell you a little story about that. Back in the late 80s, I was asked to speak. I got sober in San Diego. Got drunk there and sober and everything. And I came up to Long Beach. Well, I guess General Dynamics moved me to Texas for 2 years and 4 months. And then I got asked to come to Long Beach for a year or two for the C-17, and I've been there ever since. I'm renting a little cottage, and the people who own it has moved, and I'm still there, you know. But anyway, it's amazing, and I thought I was going there for my job, but I was there for my sobriety, thank God. I'm so grateful to my higher power. But anyway, so this was like the late 80s in San Diego, and they had a meeting on Tuesday night at 6 and Nutmeg, and Bonnie Morris, he's going to the big meeting, the Sky Net start, and he said, "Will you come speak?" And I said, "Sure." But this guy came in, Harold H., and he was from New York. He was a Class B trustee. That means he was the drunk kind. The Class A trustees, you know, are the normal ones Bill put in. He didn't trust us drunk so much. But anyway, this guy came, and I said, "Wow." What he was doing there was checking San Diego out. We put in a bid down there so that we could get that international convention. And they do everything. You have to put it in way ahead of time. Like San Antonio, Jim Williams had put it in years ago. He's dead now, and they finally got it. But, I mean, that's what it takes time. Everybody wants us there. You know? We make a good convention, you know, because we don't drink. And, you know, but what happened is... So he was checking us out for that. And I said, "Well, why don't you talk tonight? I live here. I can come talk anytime." And he gave us he was fabulous. And he is usually interesting people there. But he said he was doing a research on why Bill Wilson wanted you to call the person you sponsor a pigeon. And you know, everywhere in the United States, if you've ever been in AA for some time, all over the United States and Canada, which that's what AA is made of, not the whole world. That we vote on. You only vote on the United States and Canada, and we are one big organization. The World Organization in New York is for just those two countries. And everything else out of the country is by their own area. So I have a baby in France, in Italy, and they're trying to make a three-way like we are with Canada over there. But you don't want to know that stuff. Anyway, so Jim, and so he gave this wonderful story. He said, "Bill Wilson wanted you to call the person you sponsor a pigeon." All over the United States and Canada, he's an old timer. He's shaking the head, I can tell me. So anyway, so I thought I had heard something because, you know, I was always called the baby. So I went running to my sponsor's locksmith shop, and they say, Cliff, what do you want?" That's how he talked to me. I said, "This guy, Harold W. from the World Service Office, talked last night, and he said, Bill Wilson wanted you to call me a pigeon. You call a person, you sponsor a pigeon." He said, "We call them babies here in Southern California." I said, "I know it, Cliff, but Cliff, listen, he's doing this real research, and almost everywhere, you know, they call them a pigeon. We call them babies here in Southern California." I said, "But Cliff, listen, he wants you to call me a pigeon because pigeons carry the message." He said, "My sponsor said yes, and they shit all over you too." Now, my sponsor wasn't an educated man. That's probably the most prophetic thing he ever said. So I ain't changed. I'm still got babies and grandbabies, and I'm grateful for that. And my home group is the Bellflower Big Book Group. There's not many groups left. There's a Pacific group, and there's several, but you don't find many old-fashioned groups. There's a big difference in a group and a meeting. Have your GSR research and then come back and tell you one Friday night. It'll be very good for them to at least know what a meeting and a group is and why you can't vote but one time, what a home group is. My home group does not vote. And I get cringed when a lot of the kids, we're just full of them and new people, and we do everything. We have New Year's Eve and, oh my God, a gratitude breakfast every quarter. I mean, they're just doing stuff, you know. You're so tired. And you know, I try to be there for the group, but I tell you, and it's good for new people, young people. I don't care as long as they can focus on the one thing is don't take a drink of liquor. But my home group don't vote much, and they don't know what a home group is for. A home group is where you voted in there. You're supposed to vote on every pamphlet, everything, because it's an upside-down triangle. And so my home group, that's one thing I don't like about my home group. But you guys got it going here. Anyway, so I'm a member of the Bellflower Big Book Group, and my sponsor is Johnny Harris. And my sobriety date is May 21st, 1973. I've had... Please don't clap. I didn't do this. This is totally a gift for fun and for free. You kidding? I never quit drinking liquor. But God has allowed me to not drink it a day at a time for 38 years. Please don't clap. I'm very superstitious in this. What is it? God, I don't do anything but get a gift. And the long I stay with you guys, I learned to cherish that one little gift. That's all it is. AA is nothing else but that one gift. And if you don't know what it is, get your big book, look on page 17, that last paragraph. And Bill tells you. And then from there on, everything he's done, the steps, traditions, concepts, it's all about that same thing. Because he was in the Oxford group when he got sober. But he had that vision, and I think it was a moment of clarity from the highest power. It could be higher than my God, okay? Higher up there. Because he found the vision, and it's helped so many of us live, you know. Oh, what a blessing my life is, you know. Anyway, so that's my home group now. And tell you about me. I'm a real drunk. And I have a drunk head. I remember one time, real quick to show you how bad my head is, I was working General Dynamics in San Diego. We were working on something. I was doing a research paper for them. And we wanted to send this to Washington. And it's amazing how petty and simple the things are. But whoever got the best report in would get the doggone contract, you know what I mean? And you had to, we were trying to appease Colucci, who was the Secretary of Defense or whatever up there. And so he was about quality. Everything in the United States then was quality, quality, quality. And so they put a quality engineer to work with me on just that little part, the research of the quality part of the study. And he was one of those normal people. I don't do real well with these normal people. I'm serious. My daughter and ex-husband, I can tell. Oh, he says, I hear. And then I know he didn't talk to the daughter. Now what are you going to tell me, you know? But anyway, so this guy came over and he was a normal guy. He led his church choir. And he just oozed in life. And he just got, he was just wonderful, you know, his life. I never knew how to do life well. And I don't even today, I realize that's how dumb I've got. You get 38 years and you come to and you say, wow, I am dumb, you know, if you stay around here long enough. So what happened is one day I went to work. I wasn't grateful. I didn't say no. Chuck Chamberlain used to say you work step 7 every day, 24 hours. And then you remember Chuck, and he said, because God will remove your shortcomings only on a 24-hour basis. So I would say, oh, and God, because I don't pray good. I humbly ask you to remove my shortcomings. And so that day I didn't do it. I didn't do nothing. I went to work. I wasn't grateful. I didn't even want the job. I sat in my chair at General Dynamics. It was a fabulous building, mauve steps. Nobody ever sat in my chair before. I mean, the best of everything. We're working on that advanced lawn system, you know, and they had a lot of money. That's why you don't have one today. They use all the money planning. So I didn't want to be at work. I wanted to pray hooky. So I got up and I went over to the Condair Recreation Center, and we had General Dynamics was very good to employees. I'm sure there's some in here work for them. And I used to call it Generous Dynastic. But anyway, we always got to find something wrong, you know, to say. But anyway, so I got in my car, I left Daly Center, went over to the CRA, and I watched the guys pump iron, you know, they had the little guys, and the little girls, the women were doing the little aerobics, and they had a little shop, and I didn't see anybody who knew me. I played hooky. I got in my car, I drove back to Daly Center, parked my car, went up the gorgeous mob stairway, and I got to the top, and somebody said, "Barbara, Barbara," and I turned, it was that doggone quality engineer. And so he said something about something that got me off. He said, "I saw you at the CRA." Now, I didn't think anybody saw me. Of all the people that see me, is a doggone quality engineer, you know. So then he went on to talk about me playing hooky and all that. Oh, I got mad. I put my hand. I said, "Look, you don't tell me what to do." And I went off on him. I said, "You don't sign my paycheck." And I was loud and everything. He said, "Oh, Barbara, Barbara, all I did was ask you, would you like a cookie?" The man was offering me a cookie, and I thought he said I was playing hooky. And it was an amazing thing, and that's how my head is. And you know what's so funny? The funniest thing, the man probably didn't remember the next morning about it. Because he was a normal guy. And here I am, 25-some years later, still talking about it. Can you imagine? Oh, my God. Oh, Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, my grandpa Clancy said the real trouble with alcoholics, it's anonymous, is it's got alcoholics in it, you know. So he just keeps going. But anyway, so what happened? Let me tell you my story. I know I don't look like a drunk today. But you should have seen me 38 years ago. You wouldn't believe it was the same person. It's amazing how we even look younger when we get here, you know. But it's somehow we clean up good. But anyway, I was born an alcoholic. I'm not an authority on alcoholism, and I'm not an authority on Alcoholics Anonymous. But I know this drunk. I spent a lot of time thinking about this drunk. And then I had a cousin who was a doctor at home in Virginia, and he kind of helped me too later, you know, telling me what I shouldn't do from a medical standpoint. And poor thing, and he has Alzheimer's now. What a horrible thing. You know, here he is. I'm not even going to get into it. He crying because I was an alcoholic. And he was so brilliant and wonderful, a gynecologist. And here he is with Alzheimer's, and I end up with the greatest thing in the world, Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, you don't know. But anyway, so I was born an alcoholic. I was born genetically that my system cannot metabolize ethyl alcohol. You put alcohol in me and that system goes whack. Okay? And that obsession they talk about, they describe it very well in the big book, you know, that obsession. And they're still doing lots of studies, even at Jelinek at Yale. I was telling her, Dr. Jelinek, they named the School of Alcoholism Studies at Yale after Dr. Jelinek. But anyway, so, and I think when they hit me on the butt, I filled up with fear. I don't think I know it. I filled up with fear somewhere instead of oxygen. And that fear has been in here all my life. And I didn't know what it was. And I had the most wonderful family. I had two of the most wonderful grandpas you could ever have. I mean, they were just wonderful, my grandpa. The grandmothers were okay, too, you know, and the mom and dad. My mother, I couldn't design a better mother for me. And, I mean, I had a fantastic family, and I know sociologists used to say, you know, I shouldn't be standing there as an alcoholic. Confused the hell out of me, you know. But I had seen one other one in my family, my mother's baby sister, my Aunt Helen. I don't want to get on her tonight because it takes too much time. But I can tell you that she gave me the greatest gift after my mom that a woman can give a person. My aunt showed me what would happen to me as an alcoholic. And I know without a doubt that if I take another drink of liquor, that I'll go right to skid row. See, Alcoholics Anonymous, I know, is the only thing between me and skid row. Don't nobody have to tell me that. And because love can't get you out once the alcohol puts you there. Money can't get you out. degrees, really. They don't care about. In fact, if you go down to Skid Row, because I did a study down in San Diego State, and I hung out down there back in the 74, 75 on alcoholism there, you know. It was the easy way for me to do a class. I'm always looking for the easy way out, an interesting way, you know. And but there's a lot of degrees down there, more degrees there than you would say in the average group. And I remember I even met the president of the Winos Association down there, and he had been a professor at Howard University. But anyway, I had that feeling in here. My mom and cousins, I had all these cousins and just aunts, uncles in my family. I was born on the peninsula of Virginia. And I could see they didn't have that feeling I had in here. And I don't care how good your mother and nice your mother and father, you can't explain it to them. So I went into a dream world. Now, I used to tell people from the podium that I went into the dream world. And I acted like I was the only one I knew. But if you read the big book, it tells you in there that most, and I learned this about 3 months ago at my book study, and it says, I said, wow, because it takes me a long time to read all that stuff, honey. But I realized, and it says that most alcoholics of my type, we all go into this dream world. And I lived like that. I mean, it was wonderful. My mother loved it. She bought everything for me. My dad didn't want me to be so, yes, 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 anything. And that's how I grew up, and I was in elementary school, and then I went through school. I'm a B student, whether I study or not. And then I stay in that dream world, and I was a twirler, and I was, my mother is something, was some. I was in everything, you know, Daisy have you going. And so I was Miss Freshman, Miss Homecoming, most popular, most friendly. I didn't even like those people. That's what a dream world can do for you. And it wasn't so much that I didn't like them. I never felt comfortable with people. I never felt comfortable with people until I landed in A of A. And then there are times when I'm not comfortable with you, and I have to be honest. But I don't leave you, because I know that's alcoholism. Get on out there. They like to get us with the 30 years and so on, and we can... Womp, we got this one. Womp, we got you. And so I just went on this. Everything went good for me because I was just rolling like a tumbleweed. And I remember when I was a debutante, they must have put something in the punch because I got a little tipsy. Never been able to get there again in my lifetime. But anyway, that good feeling, you know, womp, Jack. And I had a few more like that. But it was so much fun. I had two goldfish, Pete and Jewel, and I was in there arguing with them, playing with them. My mother and my father came to the door, and they went, laughing. That was the last time my parents ever laughed about my drinking. And so what happened to me is this. It was time to go to college. Where I'm from, everybody goes to college. They don't ask you, are you going? It's where. And especially if your mother's named Daisy, like mine. And my mother, somebody said, oh, is he going to college? My mother said, everything in my house goes to college, goes to school, even the dog. She made my brother take gypsy, some kind of little classes, you know. But anyway, so it was time to pick a school. Now, I've gotten older now, and I think a lot more now. And now I kind of know. I used to say my higher power started working back when I met my first sponsor. But I know now that he started working even then. And so it was time to pick a school, and I didn't know what to pick. I never picked anything. And I told my dad, NYU, he said, you're not going to the city. And so, and then he didn't want me to go to the all-girls school. You know, just a little, and then I had a scholarship for twirling. My dad said, I don't think so. We're going to twirl down some street and somebody's going to give you money. You better throw that thing away. It's so funny. Illinois has those kind of colleges, though. And so anyway, what happened is it was time to pick one. I didn't know where to go. And my favorite speech teacher in high school said, Barbara, why don't you go to the school in Ohio? It's a big school. And I went there. And so I said, okay. So I sent away for the paperwork. The only school that asked crazy questions. Now, my granddaughter was interviewed for that, and I keep forgetting to ask her. Remind me, Kimberly, to ask the least that they ask her the same question. They interviewed her for the honors program in veterinarian school there. But of all the questions, this school in Ohio, very pompous, had the audacity to ask was, do you often drown your sorrow in drink? Now, I still think that's a horrible question to ask a 17, 18-year-old person coming into school. And I told my parents, this is a dumb school. But, you know, they sent a letter saying, we appreciate your interest in our outstanding university. I said, wow. And they said, if you, on occasion, we let Virginians matriculate in this great university. Can you? So you know I wanted to get in there then. Well, I went to that school, and I found out what they meant about drowning my sorrow in drink. I drowned everything. I drowned my sorrow. I drowned my humility, everything. God, everything. Liquor became it for me, honey. Because when I got there, I never had an advocation like my granddaughters. One is a nurse in New York. Oh, she goes, oh, Nana, I just love being a nurse. I never wanted to be anything. And the other one is in law school. She, you know, and I mean, they all seem to want to be something. All I ever wanted to be was a lady. I'm serious. And that's not ladies drink martinis. It was the most glamorous thing and still is the most glamorous thing I've ever seen. And it's still glamorous. And I used to like Loretta Young. You know, she'd get on there and that, swing that skirt around with that martini. Oh, I thought it was the greatest thing. And I never really drank martinis because there's not enough liquor in that little bottle. But it's a beautiful sight. It's glamour. And so, here I am in college, and I'm going to learn how to drink. That was my decision. But I went to a school. Thank God for that school. They told me, you're not going to waste our time, and we're not going to waste yours either. So I said, wow. And you know, in 1958... I was a freshman there, and there were 5,000 of us freshmen in 1958. So you can imagine how big it is. And that president had us in St. John's Arena, and he said, President Foster said, look to your left, we look. Look to your right, we look. That person will not be here next quarter. And I got so panicked because my parents were going to kill me spending all that money, you know, to go there. I had a scholarship in Illinois, but they didn't make me go there. But they let me go where I wanted to go. And so I said, oh, my God, I'm dead already. So I had to get going, and it was wonderful. It was the experience. And the reason why I've been thinking about it, and I'm not going to get on a, I know we are obnoxious people. Nobody likes us because we really are. We have that big bucket. It's hard to be humble when you're a Buckeye. Have you seen it? I said, oh, my God, I can't wear that in AA. I will die, you know. But anyway, so I went to school, to make a long story short, and I started drinking there in earnest. I was a dumb drinker. I had no idea you could drink in the morning and feel better. I mean, I had more worse. I threw up so much, I always kept a friend at med school because I had to have him come over and help me. And, man, I used to have, there was a guy named Jim Marshall in school. He was ahead of me by 2 or 3 years. And Jim, people thought I was his sister. My name was Barbara Marshall. And he was a big football star, you know, for Woody Hayes and everything. And I got a lot of attention because the girls thought it was my brother, you know. And Jim and I were just friends. And, but I used to drink so much. And I remember one time, I used to sit behind the bench one time, behind Woody and all of them, and Jim ran the wrong way and gave the other school a score. I'm serious. And Woody slapped him. Goddamn. Boo, boo. I thought he was going to kill Jim, you know? And that stupid Jim went and played for the Minnesota Vikings, you know? And he ran the wrong way for the Vikings and gave their team a score. I said, if it hadn't been Michigan, Woody would have shot him for real. But he's turned out to be quite a guy. But that's what I hung out in college. Anyway, here I am in college, and one quarter I'm getting A's, and the other quarter I'm flunking. Oh, it's wonderful. It's horrible because the worst thing is alcohol takes away your dream world. And I learned that from my aunt. My aunt died in Skid Row, and she was on a walker, dragging to get a drink of liquor on a walker the last time I saw her. So I know how it is. But if you have to go to Skid Row, Clancy got one over there near the Midnight Mission. It looks kind of good. I said, this can't be Skid Row. It's not that half bad over there where Clancy's downtown Long Beach. I mean, Long Beach, L.A. They have a pretty good little Skid Row there if you want to go. Somebody in here is going to go. The law of averages, I God hopes it's not me. I'd rather die than drink. So anyway, so I was in school. I didn't know what was wrong with me. But I never in my life, even to now, had the desire not to take a drink of liquor. Because it instantly was everything to me. And I was born tired. And my mother used to say that. My daughter was born tired. Because I said, oh, I'm tired. Even after them, I'm doing it all the time. And the only thing that gave me a lift in life was liquor. And now the liquor's gone. The only thing that helps me is AA. But it works slower than liquor, I tell you. But it works good when it works. But anyway, so there, I went to see a movie called The Days of Wine and Roses. My doctor didn't know how to help me and nothing. And I realized from that moment until now, I'm drunk, really. And I identified with Lee Remick's role. The assumption is that she goes to that Skid Row like my Aunt Helen and die. And I think Lee, the other guy, Jack Lemmon, goes to A of A, but I never saw A of A in that movie. I never heard about any A of A. Now, I went to school in Ohio where it started. It's in that movie now. One of my babies gave me a copy of it because I couldn't hardly look at that movie. And it is AA meetings in there. And also, my mother said my first job, I was in high school, I used to babysit a doctor's kids, so he and his wife did go to AA meetings. I said, what? I never heard of any A of A. I didn't. But alcohol will let me not hear what it doesn't want me to hear. Alcoholism can fool me even today. I can get a little bit to the left, honey, and I'm gone. I'm serious. It's a horrible illness. And I know that it's an illness today. And I agree with Bill Wilson that it's not a disease. He always said it was an illness. And he was fighting the medical community from calling it a disease. Because they wanted the insurance. So it doesn't matter tonight because words don't mean the same. And illness and disease today, the vocabulary has almost kind of transcended what they mean. But I know it wasn't a disease because every disease I've had, doctors have cured it, including my breast cancer. And I know that this alcoholism to me is more like, and I don't like to use this word because I'm not belittling it at all, retardation. Because I know it'll never get cured and I get worse with this illness every day. And the only way that I can survive a day at a time is with you people. And you know, I used to get at the podium because the first 9 years of my sobriety, honey, I was Jill AA, you know. Everything was just popping. It. Whoa, life was wonderful, you know. And then life started happening to me, shoot. If you don't have one of those firm foundations, you can go spinning, you know. But still, I have to know that if without Alcoholics Anonymous, I wouldn't want to live this life, you know. So anyway, what happened is I'm in school, this guy I went to high school with who took me to my prom was my date for the homecoming. He was the captain of the football team and all that stuff. My daughter likes all that crap, but I don't get into that. And so, I don't know, one day he didn't know what was going on because Indiana's on a different schedule. And he thought I was a little nice chick over there in Columbus, you know. He definitely didn't know I had drank because he knew me as a non-drinker in high school. And so he called and invited me to a charger game up in Buffalo, and I went. And I thought, you know, he's going to introduce to me some of those sharp guys on the Charger team, you know. I'm going to look, and although I wasn't, you know, when you're a drunk like me, it's all right to have a good boyfriend. And I had a lot of good ones. Dennis, surgeon, I think about that now if I had to marry him. Alcoholism didn't allow me to be good. Alcoholism didn't allow me, and I mean, I got the best baseball. Oh, he was gorgeous. I won't mention his name in case he's got one of you, married to one of you or something. But I got a date with him, and in those days you couldn't stay out all, you know, go back late in the dorm. This is the stupidest thing you ever heard. You either get there by 12 or stay out all night. You know, they were some dumb rules. The boys could come anytime. So anyway, that was a dumb rule back in those days, in the 60s. They had some crazy rules. So you had to stay all night, and I stayed all night, and I peed his bed. I don't think I've ever been able to see him, but I peed in some nifty beds, honey. And I used to like to put it on my husband, Earl. Earl, look what you did. Oh, my God, my husband, I used to tell him, I was going to tell everybody in the world, my husband went to college with this guy named Lee Majors, you know. And Lee's not a drunk, so he don't care if I tell you. But he had us up there, and I mean, I'm trying to drink. I can't hang in there with some of those real hard drinkers, although I can carry my weight. And we were at his house, and I woke up, I had peed in Lee Majors' bed. I said, Lee, I'm going to tell everybody I know. No, he was going to tell everybody. I said, if you do that, I'm going to tell everybody your real name. It's not Lee Majors. So, but anyway, so this guy asked me out. I went to the game, and the coach is a Buckeye of the Chargers, and the wife is, I mean, you never seen me. We're everywhere. I get in an elevator in China, and somebody goes, O-H! I-O. Ask Kimberly. Anyway, get you. Anyway, so he came, and it was him. He had told everybody I was going to be his girlfriend. Anyway, he pinned me, gave me an engagement ring, and we got married, moved to San Diego because he was playing with the Chargers, and they moved him from L.A. to San Diego. And we got there, and for half an hour I was on a pedestal. But liquor don't allow me to get on there, I'll stay up there long. And I had some horrible things, and he wanted to go into politics. You can't ever go into politics if I was ever your wife, I can tell you that. I was horrible. Well, I get drunk, I get drunk. The hair gets drunk, everything. People say, oh, I used to work. And they said, oh, I just decided to go to A of A. You did? So anyway, so we went to San Diego, and I think the first time I got arrested, I made a decision after it didn't make the paper that I said, shoot, God made me, he makes the booze, he made me an alcoholic, so he means for me to drink it. And so I said, I paid a cost to be the boss. And at that time, they used to tell you to put your liquor in the trunk in California. They weren't as mean. They really mean on you now. I said, good God. Anyway, so I put my liquor on the passenger seat. And I was glad when Alaska became a state. For those of you who are going to go back out, the Alaskan Fifth is bigger than the Texas Fifth. I've already researched that for you. And so, anyway, so it went on, and I got arrested. I went to jail in a blackout. Because every time I drank, I blacked out. I have never blacked out and became Lady Di. And I'd like to research that, but I'm too lazy. Why do we become, you know what? And so anyway, must be somebody who becomes nice. Anyway, to make a long story short, the second time I was arrested, I like jail. It is a progressive disease. But what happened to me is that I used to have trouble with my locks. And I used to tell you that's when my higher power came in. But I know that my highest power came for me to go to that college. Because that college gave me something, and I hung on, and I'd be so sick and sorry sometimes. And I'd see Coach Woody, and he'd say, Buckeyes, don't quit! And I'm going, drinking it down and saying, okay. And then it gave me a little bit more. My family gave me so much, but it gave me enough of something, a sense of belonging and hold on and something wonderful that happened to me, the experience, that I was able to hang in there until I got to you guys. I barely got here now by the skin of my teeth. So anyway, what happened is I had trouble with my lock, so I called the locksmith. Now, I got through all the B's, A's and B's in the San Diego Yellow Pages. I got to the C's, and I know this was a higher power. And it was one called Cliff Lock, L-O-C-K-E and Key. And they called. And he came out. And I said, oh, would you like a drink? He says, no, thank you. I don't drink. I'm an alcoholic, and I think you're one, too. I said, Cliff, I don't think you're supposed to do it like that. I don't think that's the way to do it. A of A said, don't do that. So anyway, so he drove me crazy. You know how you A of A's call and trying to get me to one of those doggone meetings. So I was on the wagon one Wednesday. You know how we can get on the wagon. I think I could make it. I called them and I went. And in those days, the only meeting, it's the only meeting that you could have in the whole county of San Diego on a Wednesday night. You couldn't have an AA, another AA meeting. And it was put on by the central office. And a group or meeting would host each Wednesday. And this is where we went and we got our 90-day token, your 1 year, 5 year, you know, like that. And you know that 90-day token is the only bona fide token for AA in the whole United States and Canada. I don't have time to talk about that. But anyway, so that's what happened. But anyway, so I said, Cliff, you guys help alcoholics, chronics. I just have a mild case. And that's when I became chronic. God said, let me let this lady get something. And I went home, and I didn't know what year it was when I got sober. And I used to stand at the back of a bank from Canada down there on B Street. And after everybody else in the bank left, I'd go up to this guy. And he did all my writing, and he signed my name. I went to the largest university in this country, and it's good. And I couldn't write my own name. And I thought I was speaking Apache. And I'd go in the store and go, oh, yama, 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 yama. Some guy in Arizona said, how do you know it was Apache? I said, I know it as well as I know my name. I spoke Apache. And the people in the, some of these things we know. And the people in the liquor stores in San Diego were very kind to me. They were crazy, too, because they act like they understood what I was saying. You know? And the best thing is they never called the cops on me. You see, there was no detox for women in San Diego and most of Southern California in those days. It was against the law, really, for doctors to treat women alcoholics. You know, they had just like let women into AA. Sybil Brand, you know, Sybil was the first woman on the West Coast that they even let into Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, they thought that the women would help deter the men from their primary purpose. Hell, it's the other way around. The men deter the women, I think. But anyway, so, and so my friend called me my second meeting. I was drunk as a skunk on a Friday night, and I went with my friend Dee Dee, who had a month. And I don't know too much, but my drinking buddy was there, his name was, and he told his wife, Cheney Allen, said she's pretty good when she's sober. So Cheney took my phone number. Not one AA person gave me a phone number. I said, I don't think you're supposed to do it like that. But anyway, Cheney said I was too sick and drunk to have anybody's phone number. And what happened is Cheney, I went home. So I know today now, it took me years to realize this, Alcoholics Anonymous can work on you when you're drunk. I went home, and of course, I had all kinds of liquor. I'm the type of drunk that got to have it there. Saved more money when I was drinking because I would die wondering what would happen where I couldn't get my next drink. I'd probably have to shoot myself. And so what happened is, because I get that pounding in my chest, there's nothing on this earth that solves it but a drink of liquor. Nothing. And so anyway, I woke up the next morning and Cheney called, you still want to be sober? I said, yeah. Because I wasn't craving a drink. Get your black, you know what else she said, up and take a shower. And she had me doing all kinds of stuff. And then she said, I'm going to take you to the turning point. And I'm going to hurry this up. So I didn't know what the turning point was, but I was so sick and sorry that I just followed them. It's a good thing it was AA, because I would have gone to hell with them. Going to any kind of religion. You hear these cults and stuff. And so that I got to the turning point. And it was 3 years old. I didn't know that until this year. I'm so slow at being aware of things. I went in there, and the love hits you in the face at the turning point. Now, they only had two women's recovery homes in those days, and they were different from now. They were cooperating facilities of AA, the clubs and the recovery homes. AA in the late 70s had to divest itself of all of that. And had us change all the names of the meetings over the United States and Canada. If it was named after a facility, you had to take changed the name. And but what happened is, I said, I made a mistake because I went to college. I got in there with all those drunk women. I thought I made a mistake. And the reason why I'm standing here tonight, and I'm going to rush. It was a Thursday night, and I had decided, I'm not going to do this A of A. But you're kind of good to get on the wagon. Some of you, like me, you can get on the wagon good in A. And so I had to go to the meeting outside, and it was a recovery home for men called the Wayback. Now, in those days, we had two in San Diego or more. But Pathfinders, if you had a watch, they'd send you there. Now, this the Wayback was one of those real low-bottom drunks. And so I went through the backyard into there, and I wasn't listening. I know how to sit in meetings and watch you and not have to listen to that bull. You learn it real quick, and I didn't need to hear what you guys were saying. I don't need that stuff. I don't like Alcoholics Anonymous anyway. I don't like it. So I'm sitting over there, and my mind is all over. And then a man mentioned Cadillacs and Mercedes, and he got my attention. And this man was crying, and he said, I've had the family, the businesses, the money. I've had everything. And he was crying, and I turned around, and behind me stood this man standing there tall, and tears were literally running down his cheeks. He said, I've lost everything. I don't even have shoes on. And that was my first moment of clarity, seeing that. And I see him as clear tonight as I've ever seen him. And he's standing there with tears running down his cheek. And I looked down, he didn't have any shoes. That was 1973 in San Diego. And I ran back to the recovery home. Now, that man didn't know my name, and I don't know his. But that man has had the most profound effect on my entire adult life. And I think that's what Bill Wilson meant by anonymity being the spiritual foundation of our program. He loved Tradition 12, Bill did. And so I ran back, honey, and oh, I don't want to lose anything else. And the house mother's telling me, get with winners and stick with them. That's more important than getting a sponsor. Who you hang around with in there, you got to be careful. And then I got that locksmith. And anyway, to show you how horrible it is, 90 days later, this head is gone, honey. I had the moment of clarity, I saw the man without the shoes, and it's time to get my 90-day token. And I go to the turning point, and Cheney comes to present it to me. And I had already said I'm going to go because I couldn't prove to my innermost self that I was an alcoholic. I'm going to sit down in just a minute. And it said, and so what I did was I decided to go get drunk and come back. And then I could maybe admit. But I was going to buy black and white scotch. So I bought all kinds of black and white scotch and put it in the trunk of my car. I wanted to get the 90-day token, get drunk and come back. So I'm standing there in the door and Cheney is there to give me, present me this 90-day token, and in the front door walked a hag. She was bleeding, had thrown up all over her, say her hair was everything, crying. Oh, she said, if you're thinking about drinking, don't do it. Don't do it. I said, wow, God, this thing is going too much. And so God let me have my second moment of clarity. I've had a lot of them to stay here. And I decided until one of you guys goes out, gets drunk, and come back in here looking good, I'm not going. And it's been 38 years. I have many reasons not to go. I have a daughter and four wonderful grandchildren that I try to explain to them. They don't understand. I never have been drunk. And I have to sit down because I'm way going over. And I just have to tell you all the gifts that I've had. And it's just fantastic. This program is just, oh, my God. And then I went to China. Had I gone to China? And this can help everybody in the room. And I went on a manufacturing engineering delegation. We went for President Bush. And we went over there, and I tell you, it was the most fantastic thing that could ever happen to an industrial engineer. I represented California and my company. But anyway, we went everywhere. And by the time I got to Shanghai, beautiful city, I went to sleep one night. See, God had to take me to the epitome, fill up this greed and this self-centered woman to get her attention. And I got there, I called my daughter, and we cried. She's in Connecticut, because Shanghai, China is a long ways from Ocean View, blah, blah, blah. But in order to get through this self-centered drunk, God has to do extra things to get my attention for me to accept. And one morning I woke up in Shanghai and I forgot where I was. And I said, well, God, at least I'm not craving a drink of liquor. And that's the gift. It's not the jobs and the kids and the cars and the home and the this and the that. It's every morning when I wake up, God isn't, if I don't crave a drink of liquor, that's it. And everybody in this room, it don't matter how much time you have, although I don't want to give mine up, but you know. But after I tell you, we're all in this room on the same step. That's what I want to say. And be more grateful to wake up in the morning and not crave a drink of liquor. And my sponsor's widow gave me his ashes, so they're sitting on my mantle. And I'm going to tell you this. When I was newly sober, when I was growing up, my mom said, do now lay me down to sleep. And I did that. I didn't know how to pray. Still don't. But then I said, who else to pray for, Mom? She said, pray for happiness. I want you to try that too. She said, sweetheart, if you have happiness, you'll have everything you need and everything you want. And the longer I'm sober, the more I'm convinced Alcoholics Anonymous is the answer to that childhood prayer. I'm so sorry I got diarrhea of the mouth. I'm sorry. Thank you so much.